Hey everyone, it's Rich. Last year, I walked into a clothing store. There were no customers, and the shop owner, well, he looked bored. So I struck up a conversation. It didn't take long before he asked me what I did for a living. I told him I worked in the field of data privacy, and that I was part of a growing mission to help people take back control over their personal data. His reply?
Oh, I don't care about that stuff. I have nothing to hide. The digital age is here. My personal information is all over the web.
You know, the usual response. Ironically, he then spent the next 10 minutes talking about the importance of using cash. And why? Well, to prevent the government from tracking his purchases and whereabouts. After that, he proceeded to broach a variety of privacy-oriented topics, from online censorship and doxing to cryptocurrency and even world government. Now, I never called him out on it, but during my 20 minutes in his store, he essentially made the case for personal privacy and didn't even realize it. And he's not alone. One of the greatest obstacles to changing the way people approach the management of their personal data is the privacy knowledge gap. And that's why we created this podcast, to help the public better understand its privacy risk exposure and how to mitigate it. Because the first step toward fixing a problem is to recognize that it exists in the first place. Today, we're going back to the basics by talking to one of the top power users of MySudo, the world's only all-in-one privacy app. Now, we didn't create privacy files with the extreme privacy person in mind, but I do think it's helpful to hear how a power user leverages the concept of compartmentalizing one's online activities to maximize the reduction of digital exhaust. It's been a while since we've done a MySudo-focused episode. I hope you like it. You're listening to Privacy Files. This episode is brought to you by Anonymy Labs, makers of MySudo, the world's only all-in-one privacy app, and Sudo Platform, the cloud-based platform companies turn to for seamlessly integrating privacy solutions into their software. And please check out our newest offering, MySudo VPN, now available in the App Store and Play Store, a consumer VPN that is actually private.
Nick, welcome to Privacy Files.
Thanks, Rich.
So maybe you could talk a little bit about how you ended up here at Anonymy Labs.
Sure. Well, I received a phone call or a text, probably a text message actually, from a colleague of ours or friend. And the original group came from IBM Security. And I heard rumors that a few people were kind of leaving on a separate mission, and people whose skill set and experience I certainly respected and had kind of wondered what they were doing. And then I got a text message and replied and said, let's catch up for coffee. And so I did. And they pitched me on the mission, which we're on. And I was all in. And so it went from coffee to a job interview and then starting.
So you've generally kind of been aware of the privacy space. And I guess, I mean, coming from obviously with your accent, I think people, just so they know, it's obviously you're from Australia and a little bit different culture, but a lot of similarities too between Australia and the U.S., I guess before we get into like exactly, you know, you're kind of where you fall in the privacy spectrum, what would you say the privacy culture is like in Australia?
Yeah, good question. I think Australians are becoming certainly more aware. I don't necessarily think it's as strong as what it is in the US and Europe, maybe just from a historical perspective. But Australia is not immune to data breaches. One of our large telcos, telecommunication companies, had a breach within the last 12 months, I think it was. And that certainly, I think, made it a lot more real from a lot more normals. I know even in my time at Anonymy, the word data breach and digital privacy, digital exhaust, have gone from headlines and terminology that you really only saw on tech blogs to things that you see in common everyday news now. And so that, you know, those terms have been normalized a lot more than what they used to be. And so general awareness in Australia as it is here is definitely increasing as normal people's life becomes much more digitized and documented online.
We've talked a lot on this podcast over different episodes about everybody has a different definition of privacy, and people fall on that spectrum in different places depending on, and there's a knowledge gap. One, I think a lot of people just don't, if all you've ever known in your life, of course, is the internet, you're probably more apt to expose your personal data to the world for free stuff and whatever it might be. But where do you fall? I mean, there's obviously the extreme side of it. There's people in the middle, and then you got those that just don't care. Have you seen, I guess, where are you now, and have you kind of evolved over time?
I've definitely evolved. I certainly wasn't perfect to begin with, and I'm not perfect now. I've had the social media accounts in the past of which I've offboarded since. So, you know, now I'd say I'm definitely right of center, but I'm not full tinfoil hat, because you still need to be able to operate in the world as we know it today. You know, you can go as far as buying a house in a name that's not your birth name and setting up the structures to facilitate that. There's a lot of labor. There's labor involved in that, and investment, time investment. So I haven't gone to that degree. But I would certainly consider myself privacy aware. And, you know, I think the way I frame it in my own mind, it's a right that I should get to dictate who and when my information is shared. And people give it up for free so easily now, whether they know it or not. And so for myself, in every interaction, whether it's physical or digital, every time I have to give over a piece of information about myself, I have this mini dialogue in real time in my head as to why they're asking for it. And if they're asking for it, what are they likely to do with it? And so I don't consider that those unreasonable questions that a normal person can't ask themselves. I think Anonymy Labs is sort of on this mission to help normals make that part of kind of, they should question that every time they're asked for that information. And I consider myself a generally curious person. So in all these interactions, you kind of, it's like the child that keeps asking their parents, but why? So I sort of do that.
Yeah, it's your data, right? It's your property. You own it. You should be in charge of it. So you are a power user of MySudo.
I've been told, yeah.
And you also contribute providing feedback to product development here at Anonymy when it comes to MySudo. Where do you see MySudo going from your vantage point as, you know, this big challenge of trying to get a larger audience more aware of privacy and get them to engage in taking ownership of what happens to their personal data? Obviously, those who are extreme privacy people, they get it. They know. They go through lots of effort to make that happen. What are you seeing? Where would you like to see MySudo go?
Yeah, for me, I want to see it become more accessible to the average person. So even if I think about my own friends and family, who I tell them what I do for a living, the solutions that we provide, it needs me giving them the 10-second tutorial on how to get involved in this ecosystem. And where I see MySudo going and what I want for it is to be simplified for the everyday user that hasn't already gone on that journey, or has an inkling about, hey, this is something I should care about because I just read on the news today that my telephone provider was in a data breach. What's my next steps? And so part of a lot of the feedback that I give back into our product org is based on my personal experiences of telling my older parents who weren't brought up in the age of technology, hey, here's why you should care and here's why you shouldn't use your same email address everywhere. And then convincing my siblings who, like me, were born in the age of technology, hey, here's why you shouldn't put everything you do online. Or here's, at least if you want to participate in that, and that's okay, why you should keep that separate from the same information that you give to your bank, from the information that you give to your landlord, those sorts of things. And so what I want to see for MySudo, and what I know that we're working on, is democratizing, reducing the barrier of entry, and bringing these solutions to multiple platforms beyond the mobile device, which is sort of where we've historically been.
We went to the Bridal Expo, as I've mentioned many times on the podcast, back in May. More so than anything, it was an experiment to talk to complete normal people and just get their feedback on how they view privacy and what they do about it, if anything. Obviously, as you can imagine, a lot of it was just a lack of knowing what to do or what the exposure was, I think, for many people. But the most common use case that everybody could get their mind around was a spam trap. Right? We can use MySudo to just give somebody an alternative email address for entering a giveaway, and then I don't get bombarded with spam to my primary account. obviously my suit is way more than that. But correct. If you're to talk to somebody who's interested in using a privacy app, how do you start with them? You can't overwhelm them. So where do you begin?
For me, it's a mix of education. So I work in the tech field. I understand that as soon as you load a web page into your browser, that there's hundreds of requests going off, not just to the company whose web page you're going to, but to all these advertising agencies, business partners, partner suppliers that are associated with that online business where there's some deal for the information that's being shared. So there's kind of a little bit of education combined with a little bit of fear combined with, hey, it's actually, even if you don't fear any of that, it's actually quite empowering to take back control of your personal information and privacy once you become aware. And, you know, for me, when I go and use a service, whether it's something as simple as getting a haircut or getting a car service or checking into a hotel, and maybe this is just me because I really believe in what we do and you know, I've sort of been here, you know, almost since our start, it's quite, I find it empowering being able to dictate what I do and don't share and who I interact with these organizations as. So for me, I have multiple pseudo. I have those that are in the name of real me, Nick, and then I have those that are in an alternate identity. And not because I am doing anything nefarious, but if I pick something easy like Yelp, I just want to know whether the restaurant was 5 stars or 2 stars. You don't need to know my first name, surname, my address, or my date of birth to tell me that information. But you'll find if you go to that website and sign up, they ask for all those pieces of information. I find myself treating every digital relationship kind of with a healthy level of skepticism, not at what they're doing necessarily, but why do they need these pieces of information to provide me this very specific service?
Yeah, when we were talking to normies, call them normies, but when we were talking to them at the Bridal Expo, the spam trap concept was easy to understand. The part that people struggle still is the compartmentalization concept. And when I ask people, whether it was on the podcast or not, how long have you been using the same email and phone number for basically everything? It's years and years and years. And the light bulb goes on when you kind of generally explain to them what happens over time is that email or phone number is used as an identifier to tie them to all of this rich behavioral information to basically build a profile on you.
Right. Well, Anonymy is 8.5 going on 9 years old. I haven't had a Gmail address for probably 7 years, but I've seen other people's Gmail in that time. And I, if I'm remembering it correctly, and you know, listeners will keep me honest, I think even Gmail now almost auto-categorizes emails for you. Like it'll say these are, you know, click travel and we'll sort of siphon out your travel email, you know, as opposed to shopping and other categories. And so that visual cue alone tells you what compartments exist within your life and that this company has been able to sort of, you know, it's presented as a convenience mechanism and yes, it really is, but that's information that's discoverable about you by that organization. And so we all have these compartments in our life, whether we know they exist or not. And my pseudo is trying to help you dictate what those are rather than, you know, other companies. So for me, of the 9 pseudo that we're allowed to have today, I have 4 that are for the various compartments of the real me. And then I have 3 that are for all the things that I do under, you know, an alternate name. Pick your favorite character. Yeah.
If you had your wish, how many pseudos would you like?
More than 9. Yeah. For the product manager listening.
So I guess is it thinking about use cases, obviously online shopping is a big one. Mm-hmm. I think you break it down to first party relationships. Like everybody pretty much shops on Amazon today. I'm not too worried about Amazon. I'm worried about where that data ends up. So maybe totally. They sell it to somebody else. I think that's where the problems start to creep in. And we find a lot of times we'll see the news articles where you think you had just a exclusive first party relationship with whoever you were doing business with. And then you find out, oh, they were sharing your data. They had some agreement with someone in big tech, Facebook, whatever it might be. We've seen that with the H&R Block and the tax software, sharing your sensitive financial information. And there's lawsuits that are happening all the time. So where do people start? I guess you just got to take it piece by piece. Okay, my online shopping, I'm going to start being careful about how I handle that.
Yeah, so I can, if I think about my own journey, the very first pseudo I created was one just for interacting directly with my family because I moved overseas. So I created one for talking to mom and dad and my siblings. But I don't trust, I love my family, but I know that the information I give them is, you know, I'm going to tell my sister my email address and my phone number. Then she's going to install some app on her phone and she's going to grant that app access to her contacts, which has my email address and phone number. And so if that's the same email address and phone number that I use for my bank, it's now in some other app that she has on her phone. And so from there, you know, and this was me learning in real time as well. I was like, okay, well, actually, no, I want a second pseudo that I just use for my financial relationships. And so they're two first class compartments for me, you know, family and finance, but they're separate for a reason because I can't control what my family do with the information that I give them, but I can control as much as I can the information that I share with, you know, financial institutions. And then so I went from that to then, oh, I've just moved overseas and now I need to find a place to live. And so I created a pseudo for interacting with my landlord because they needed email address and phone number. But I didn't want to give, for all the same reasons, I didn't want to give them the ones that I use with my bank and I don't want to give them the ones that I use with my family. So I created a separate one. And there's no overhead of like, oh God, I've got three phone numbers and three email addresses. It's all too hard. It's actually quite simple because you're not quoting them every day. And then you learn real world sort of stories. You learn little tricks for like dealing with the, someone asks your phone number and you're like, oh, I got a new phone and give me a sec. I need to look at my phone. So it's not sinister. It's not actually hard.
I guess that leads me to the next question I was going to ask you, which is how do you stay motivated to continue to operate like this? Because I know to some people out there who are completely unfamiliar with a lifestyle like this, they're thinking, sounds like a lot of work.
It's actually not. It becomes second nature. Saying it's a lifestyle is probably makes it sound like it's more work than it really is. Because if you think about it, you're not signing up for an account on something every single day. And when you do, you have a minute. You're at your computer doing it online or you're doing it on your phone, you know, from the privacy of your own home. Here's another real world story. So, you know, as a result of living between two countries, my car battery went flat. So I flew back home, had to go get a new car battery, walked into Super Cheap Auto, which is a car store back home. And actually, so there was two identity information related interactions that I did not expect to have in an auto parts store. So I went to the battery section and I was looking for a chart where I could look up my car model to see what battery it needed. And there was actually a digital pad there, but rather than asking me for the year, make, model of my car, it asked for my license plate number. I was like, why do you need that? You just need to know, you know, whether it's a Mazda or a Toyota and what model and what year. You don't need to know my license plate number. And so that's how your brain starts to think once you get into this. And so what did I do? I went to the front of the store and I said to the person, hey, I need a battery for this car, this make, this model. Tell me which battery it is. I don't, you know, you don't need my license number. And so they told me the battery. Then you take the battery up to the front. And then what's the first thing they ask you? Hey, are you part of our rewards program? No, I'm not. Don't live here. Don't need to be. They said, oh, but if you sign up today, you get $40 off the battery. And so at that point in time, you need a real email address or phone number because, you know, they need you to confirm the email so that they know that they've got you. And then they're going to give you $40 off the battery. So obviously I used a my pseudo email address. But again, it was one of the pseudos. It's not the real me because I don't need to know who I am just to give me a car battery. And so that's quite I still like to think of myself as normal. It's everyone who's listening to this, I assume, has bought a car battery at least once in their life. And there's how you do it without, you know, giving up your personal information because it's simply not required. But at the same time, we all have a discount. So, you know.
You save 40 bucks.
Save 40 bucks.
I think about, as you were telling the story, I'm thinking about all the stores that I go to where it's become so routine here for the person working the checkout stand where they simply they basically just ask you, hey, can I have your email address? Can I have your zip code? Can I have all this information? And they don't even tell you why. They just expect you to give it to them.
Yeah. I mean, I've been back in the US for a month and a half now, and I have probably at least six other examples that I could quote off the top of my, you know. So I went and got a haircut the other day from a brand new barbershop downtown. Really friendly guys there. I walked in, I might have been their third customer on their second day of opening. And like any barbershop experience, you kind of go and you sit down, you talk about what you do. You know, they're making small talk. And then at the end, it comes to pay. And he didn't know how to charge me without asking me for my phone number. And I said, mate, I've just been telling you for an hour what I do for a living. And he said, oh, yeah, but this new point of sale software, you know, unless I stick a phone number in, it doesn't know. And I said, well, what do you do with that phone number? He's like, oh, it's so we know what haircut to give you so the next time you come back in, we can give you the same one. And I said, how about I just tell you the next time I come back in what haircut I want? Wow. And he's like, oh, but I can't create the user record in the software to charge you. And this is common point of sales checkout software. I've seen at every coffee shop and bakery. So it's he might just not have known how to drive it properly, which that's fine. But he was not expecting to get pushback at that point of the interaction. So, like you said, the world's programmed that way. You know, I went to a restaurant the other day. There was a lineup, 15 minutes wait. And she said, oh, can I have a phone number so we can call you? And I said, no, I'll just stand right here. You know, in the waiting lobby, out of the way of everyone. She's like, oh, no, I can't do that. I need a phone number. And I said, but I'll be here. You know, I'm three arms distance away from you. Did not compute. So, and on that point in time, I actually didn't give a pseudo number. I just said, you know, 385-123-45678. And she didn't click on that. I just, you know, counted to eight.
They're just on autopilot. It's like they're zombies.
Yeah.
Wow. It's scary. You mentioned before we started recording that sometimes you use my pseudo almost, you make a game out of it too, just to kind of have a little fun. So if you're checking into a hotel maybe and you created basically a pseudonym, or you're trying to do something that's not necessarily officially related with government activities or whatever, you kind of just turn it into a game.
Yeah. I mean, well, I kind of like to, again, because I'm sure I'm a pain in product side, but I like to experiment with where the boundaries are. So, I came back to the US, I got an eSIM card. I got that eSIM card in the alternate identity of one of my pseudos, so I never had to walk into the store. I signed up online for the eSIM. I used a pseudo mail address. So, you know, ironically, at that moment in time, I didn't have a Wi-Fi connection because I just got off. I didn't have a SIM card because I just got off the plane. So I'm sitting in the airport on airport Wi-Fi using a VPN. And I go to the telecom provider that I'm using to sign up for an eSIM. So I sign up with my pseudo email address that I already had, the alternate name and surname that I needed. I think they asked for a date of birth, and I'm sure that if they did, obviously made one up. Or I have one dedicated to that alternate pseudo, and so I know his email address. And it's almost funny because I find myself talking about this alternate pseudo like is an imaginary friend that sits next to me, because he's lived and existed for 6 years, and there's two others of him as well. And it's not as out there or as tinfoil hat as it seems. So yeah, then I got an I 5 minutes later, I'm in the US with an eSIM in the name of this alternate name, and it's paid for with a virtual card out of my pseudo. So I now have a completely anonymous or non-Nick relationship with a telco provider. And then once you've got that, then you can sort of go from there. Now I'm online, and now I can, you know, go do the things that a normal person would do.
Is it hard to keep track sometimes?
No, actually. And experience can make that better. And we have plans to do that. But like I said, I know I've got a pseudo for family. I've got a pseudo for banking. I've got a pseudo for paying rent without giving it all away. And then I've got others for other obvious, sort of compartments. Actually, what I do find as well is, so you don't necessarily have to create a separate pseudo for shopping versus selling versus signing up to rewards program. They can all be co-located in one. And for me, you know, due to the fact that we can only have nine at the moment, that they need to be. But all of those things co-located in a pseudo where it's not Nick, because for none of those relationships I need to be Nick. I don't need to be Nick to get $40 off my car battery. I don't need to be Nick to purchase on Amazon. I don't need to be Nick to sign up to Yelp and tell me what restaurants are good in Salt Lake.
Maybe we take a quick detour here for just a few minutes. You mentioned VPN, and we have a new consumer VPN that came out recently. And maybe you could talk a little bit to just how unique that is to have a VPN service where you don't have to provide PII to create the existence, the account, if you will, on your mobile phone. I think a lot of people don't realize big VPN providers out there, but you still have to tie that instance to your personal information.
At least an email address for some of them, correct? Yes. And so, you know, if those VPN companies are ever, you know, compelled legally to have to hand over what they know, although they, like us, they might be no-logs VPNs where they don't track the activity, they can at least identify that the person who owns blah@gmail.com is a customer of theirs. And so if that email address is used on other websites where someone was forming, you know, activities, good or bad, you almost don't need to know that what they were doing at the time. You can at least pin, you know, you can create the web of relationships. And so, you know, one of the strengths of MySudo is that don't ask for anything. We sort of create a private key pair that represents you. And that same promise to privacy exists in our VPN app as well.
And then coming back from that detour, it triggered something else here as you were talking. We do a lot of ads on Reddit for MySudo. Reddit's an interesting place. Mm-hmm. I'll leave it at that. But we do leave comments open. We kick the bad ones out, of course. But I leave the comments open because I treat it like an ongoing focus group. I want to see what people think.
Right.
And one of the most common pieces of feedback that I get, and again, these are from people that have never probably used MySudo, but they say, oh, yes, we'll trust you with our data. And I'm sure, you know, you'll be monetizing that and doing all kinds of stuff with it. Maybe you could talk a little bit about that. That's not possible, right? I mean, because we're using public key encryption, we don't have that information. And I think it's one of those things where I can't really go communicate that through an online discussion forum, but I wish I could.
Right. Well, one thing, you know, I've been with Anonymy since almost the very, very start, and I've seen, and it's actually interesting here, sort of sitting opposite someone who works in marketing, I've always wondered and had good lunchtime discussions with, you know, people in our marketing and sales department is, what is it like working in sales and marketing for a company that knows very little about their users? It's really difficult. And as you go, or as we've been on this journey, and we understand, you know, for myself, I understand just how much data companies can collect on users where they don't have those restrictions. They have no excuse almost for not creating a really good product that is super targeted at their user base and benefits from all those insights. Whereas for us, it's really hard because we have so little. What we do have, though, are really engaged users that come to us through support or contact us through other means that give us their wish list of all the things that they want to see in MySudo. Probably our biggest challenge is distilling that into a priority order. While it's a really noble mission to be a company centered around privacy, it actually makes it creates, I find it an interesting challenge for our data scientists, our sales and our marketing team.
Yeah, it's definitely a challenge trying to explain public key encryption to someone that has never heard that before. And then maybe I don't even know it that well, right?
It's
But I can understand their sentiment. It's like, okay, well, you want us just to trust you versus all these other communications apps out there. And it's a challenge to someone that lives more in that mainstream audience to wrap their minds around, yeah, we don't have that data.
Right. Or even from simple usability aspects in the app, right? Like some people might find the interactions with MySudo don't meet them how they want to use the app. And the thing about MySudo is you can use it very differently depending on how you're using it. And so without the luxuries of front-end analytics, as an example, it's really hard to optimize. So it's an interesting journey. And, you know, I think we've actually, there's some novel ways in there that you can derive insight while still respecting, you know, privacy. And that's, at least for me, from a, you know, an engineering perspective, that's been an interesting problem to solve as well.
Any times maybe you outsmarted yourself and went so far that it caused issues?
Yeah, there's definitely been times in our history where we would have been like, damn, you know, if only we could have that little bit, you know, that would, you know, because if you ask, pick something really simple, if you went to our lunch table and asked everyone sitting there how they would change the messaging experience, you'd get at least five different answers.
You've talked about the dating, obviously, is a huge use case. Got experience with using dating apps. That is a very interesting world, to mm-hmm. say the least. There's catfishers all over it. You get on a dating app and literally within the first 10 minutes, you've got at least one catfisher. And over time, the more you do it, you can spot them pretty quickly who they are. But that's a popular use case. You want to make sure, you know, your actual phone number that you primarily use, of course, is tied to your physical location. I think even it's getting to the point now where email address is kind of in that same ballpark too. So I guess the question I have really is, what do you, is there a point when you're like, yeah, maybe I'm going too far and I'm not getting, right? Like there's not a net positive. I mean, how do you balance that? I think that's one thing we've struggled with sometimes is everyone's situation is unique.
Right. Yeah. I am not too far, more just socially awkward. So there's been several times where, particularly on the other side of COVID now, where every restaurant, or not every restaurant, but a lot of them have gone to the QR code mode of their menu, which as a privacy person really irks me because I know that I'm going to a website. That website, just by the pure fact of visiting it, is already collecting information on me. And so, and then for some of those restaurants, they also do shared billing through these online sites. And so yes, at the start of this year, I was living away from home with sort of a group of friends for a little bit, and they would eat out quite often. And so we would go to these restaurants and everyone's scanning their QR code, getting the menu up, and trying to at least all order their food at the same time so that our food came out. And so I'm there scanning the QR code, and then all these websites want you to sign up just to order your food, which drives me insane. And so, you know, here I am filling out pseudo details. And so I'm already 30 seconds off the pace between everyone and their food, right? And then I'm getting, you know, everyone's sort of paying with their credit card that they already have loaded into their Apple Wallet or Apple Pay. And here's me sort of, you know, fumbling to get a virtual card. And so now I'm 60 seconds off the pace. And so that's where, not that I've gone too far, I wouldn't not do it, but that's where for me, I know that we can make those interactions more seamless so you're not the odd one out.
They're looking at you and they're like, it's Nick again.
Yeah, it's Nick. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, he's going to slow us all down. So you don't want to get between people and food. So.
You mentioned virtual cards. You want to talk a little bit about that?
They're great.
Yeah.
I don't fear my credit card details being stolen as much as I used to or being breached. Well, what I really enjoy now is using them for the sign up now with your credit card information for the 30-day trial, and then we won't charge you till later. So, with our virtual cards, you can get past the prompts, you know, put in virtual card information to get into the service, and then as soon as you're in, you can cancel that card if you want, so that you can enjoy your 30-day free trial without being worried that in 30 days you've forgotten that you've signed up, and you know they get that first billing cycle from you.
Exactly.
Yeah, I use them. I use them heavily.
Yeah, we talked about in the past episode, a lot of press about virtual cards lately. I know in my banking portals, I'll see that being offered. Mm-hmm. Now the question becomes, but do you trust those large financial institutions? Mm-hmm. And that's a whole other conversation. But I guess what are some of the benefits, really, of virtual cards? I mean, number one, we got a lot of normies, again, don't understand that banks and financial institutions, credit card companies, they sell that data.
They do. They sell your purchase behavior for sure. And I think of a credit card number in the same way that I think of a phone number or an email address. They're, although they don't have my name embedded to them, they're a numeric representation of my purchasing habits that are either for grabs by my financial institution and or whoever they sort of choose to sell that onto. And, you know, with the advent of open banking as well, there's a lot of other apps now that kind of promise to help you derive insights from your purchasing habits, you know, if only you just grant them access to your transactions. And so suddenly your transaction information is now, you know, distributed amongst all these other vendors that sort of play in that space too. So for me, you know, my most recent, when did I last use a virtual card and felt like that I was protected, would have been I signed up for one of the ride sharing apps here. And so obviously again, used pseudo phone number, pseudo email address, not the real me, because the Lyft or the Uber driver doesn't need to know my real name. He just needs to know where I'm going and that I'm going to pay him. But those apps do, and I understand this, they make it fairly hard for you to be somewhat anonymous. So, you know, one of them, for example, asks for a photo of your driver's license or government-issued ID. And if you don't provide that, you actually can't book a Lyft. L-I-F-T, not L-Y-F-T. One of the others doesn't go that far, but what they do ask is for two funding sources with the same name and billing address. So I chose that particular ride-sharing app because I didn't have to scan my photo ID. And so what did I do? I created two virtual cards in the same name of one of my alternate pseudos. So now that I now I can use that ride sharing app, you know, quote unquote anonymously, not as Nick, and I pay my bill. They take me where I need to go.
Crafty.
But again, it's not actually. You don't need to have the inner workings of a computer or have been an engineer in the past to do those things. But it's interesting as you sort of get into this space and this sort of mindset to sort of see where services introduce that friction to get to the real you. You know, whether it's in the best interest of, say, the driver in this case, or just because they want that, because that means that they can market to you more effectively, or the information that they on-sell to their partners is just that much more valuable.
Talking about all the lawsuits that, I mean, pick any week and there's a lawsuit, something, some class action lawsuit against a company for breaching your personal data in some way, leaking it, sharing it, whatever it might be. When you're trying to get a person that really is not, doesn't seem that interested in their personal data and who they're sharing it with. And then I go back and I look at the news and I go, okay, like the most recent one, not that I'm an anime fan, but there was a story about, I guess Sony owns a company that does anime streaming. And apparently they were sharing that behavioral data with Meta, I think. And I forgot, there was one other company. It was Facebook and might have been Google. I'm not sure which company it was, but I think there was a settlement. It was like $16 million. And in the grand scheme of the privacy space, that's a small settlement. Mm. But it's a struggle to, how do you get people to at least take that first step and go, look, this is real. Maybe you don't care. But at some point, that information will fall into a bad actor's hands, not an advertiser, but a bad actor.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I, even with my own sort of family who are, you know, I guess intimately familiar with what I do, they all have very different professions. Some where security and privacy is actually a theme within their job, and others where it isn't. And I think part of it is kind of trying to, that continual education, but in a form that is understandable to a normie. And I don't pretend to have nailed that craft yet. I share articles that sort of talk about data breaches with them, that almost as a experiment for part of my job to sort of see what questions they ask. You know, the other thing, I more a party trick than anything else, not a trick necessarily, but you know, if I'm talking to someone about what I do, and you know, a lot of people go, oh, it's all out there anyway, I don't care. You know, they've sort of got that defeatist attitude to it. I'm like, okay, can just give me your phone for 3 minutes unlocked. I'll stand right here, but you won't be able to see what I'm doing on it. Because if you truly don't care, you'll be okay with that. And then they go, no. And so I'm like, okay, so you do care. And so then you can kind of sort of go from that example and sort of extrapolate out.
Yeah, we like to use the metaphor, although it's more for personal safety. But you know, at night you lock your front door, you shut your windows, most people do, and make sure they're locked. It's kind of similar with your data. Like, why would you be casual about that? Because again, with all of these behavioral models out there, I can get to the point where I can predict what Nick's going to do on Saturday.
Yeah.
And if I've got bad intentions, that's not a good thing, right? It's, you don't want to scare people, but at the same time, you just want to let them know, here's what your risk exposure is. You respond to that accordingly based on your kind of how you operate in your world, but everybody's going to be different. There's the Michael Bazell. I think you mentioned some of the extreme sides of it where, you know, people just want to disappear online. That's kind of tough to do in the digital age.
It is. Yeah. I mean, I really think, you know, what we're trying to do will help close the gap there so it doesn't feel like a chore. But yeah, there's a spectrum, right? And you don't have to go all in to actually get a lot of the way. I think an app like MySudo really helps you get Like if there was a scale of all the things that you could do without and buying a house anonymously or under a totally different name was, you know, on the far end of the scale, that's a 10. There's a lot of, you can get to a pretty healthy 7 on that scale just using MySudo without having to go to, you know, that far extreme. That's what I'm excited to see us really evolve in the niche future here.
Do you feel like you've had some success bringing people over to your side?
Yeah, I think so. I've got a sibling who works overseas at times. He gets it. I've got another one that has a young family. And so now parents who have children now, it's a big challenge. And it's, you know, again, it's a lunchtime table conversation that we have here in the office. There's staff here with parents that are in the, say, 10-year-old plus, they're already online in some form. And then, you know, they say, oh, but my friends at school have access to this. Why can't I have access? And I'm not a parent, so I'm not qualified to have an opinion. So I understand it's hard, but can you do it in a way that sort of sets them up so they're, I guess, set up for success, you know, and not embarrassment in the future is a challenge that we're actually kind of, you know, looking at solving at the moment.
I guess as we get close to wrapping up, any advice, tips, tricks, hacks you want to share with people who are thinking about increasing their usage of MySudo, but they're still kind of unsure where they go from here? They've got the app, they've been trying it out, they've got a couple of sudos created, but they're still like, how do I get more out of this?
I think I'd say for every service, whether it's online or in person, that you sign up within the next 2 weeks, ask yourself why they're asking for certain information. So increasing your level of healthy skepticism and or curiosity is, as soon as you start asking yourself why, and then understanding that these services don't give you the option to not provide that information, you know, whether it's your real name or not, then you're like, well, I've got a pseudo here. It's really easy. Why wouldn't I? So the answer becomes, why wouldn't I use a pseudo rather than why would I use one? And then for every online service that you have already, pick one random one day, go into your account settings, find the sub setting that's like privacy and security, and just look at all the things that are turned on by default that you're actually able to turn off. And then you'll go, oh, I never realized they were on by default and I have the option to turn them off. Well, maybe I should. And then, you know, while I'm at it, maybe I should change the email address I signed up with to this service to my pseudo address. And you know, you'll probably find you can knock it all out in a weekend and, you know, get to the quote unquote my pseudo power user level, which isn't that hard to do in the scheme of things because it becomes standard default practice. It's like exercise, you know, it's exercise for your online digital footprint.
Any parting words before we wrap this up?
No, I think I'd just sort of say stay curious when it comes to your online digital presence and develop that healthy level of skepticism and see what you learn.
You are a true MySudo ambassador.
Thank you.
Great power user. I appreciate it. Thanks so much for your time, Nick.
Thanks, Rich.
Well, that's going to do it for this episode. In our next episode, we'll be talking DNA and privacy, as we'll be joined by Colin from Anonymy Lab's security and compliance team. Recently, a hacker stole millions of genetic profiles from the popular DNA ancestry testing company, 23andMe. And now, this information is being sold on the dark web. What's eye-opening is how this personal data was stolen. According to 23andMe, no information systems were breached. The hacker simply reused credentials found in databases for hacked accounts of other services on the internet. Yes, this episode will reinforce the importance of adhering to password management best practices, but it will also explore the privacy risks around sharing your DNA. Until next time, don't forget, privacy is a human right.